Let's see.
Well, you mean some of us off to the fly fishing?
It's August the 16th, and I'm Jonathan Gerland. I'll just sit right here and y'all say your names.
Charles Foster.
Mike Smith.
Don Harrison.
George Holden.
Carol Dover.
Okay, and we're just reminiscing old times at TSC Railroad. And, what's that?
George was telling about the day he had to plant the shrubs out in front of the building.
Oh, okay. Tell us about that, George.
You said, what about who, George?
Who wanted the shrubs planted?
Where is this going in the archives?
Yeah.
Well, this will be the time to get straight on legends, and then you can ask questions. We have a set of legends. And I'm gonna give you three, and they may wanna add to it. One is right here, it's Carol Dover, Willard Connor, and over there, Walman. And the so-called old legends, they couldn't even be a fireman to these guys. We're running steam with a locomotive engineer and a fireman. But they thought they were pretty good. Most of them was their own PR person, so if you get set your mind to it, you can become a legend. Ain't no big deal. Now I'll quit right there. Somebody else might want to add one on.
One thing I remember about the legend, over there at Walmart, that was back during the days of the steam engine. And all the engineers had their own, well, blowing the whistle. And they had their own sound. And Odell Womack could make you want to cry, or he could make you want to laugh. He could blow it any way you wanted. He had his own set horn there. And you knew when he was coming to the dive bar.
Tell me about, you were telling me, Gary Mike, about, was it Ed Steed or one of the Steeds that was planted? Throw out an apple or a pear
peach seed. Peach seed. We would get on the caboose and ride to Lufkin in the afternoon, and that's when we started work at 5 o'clock. And Ed would always have him some peaches. He would have a peach peeled and half eaten before we'd get to the 4 mile board. And he would throw them seeds out the window, and he would tell me, he said, peach tree ever grows out here, you know who planted that thing. But the thing I got in trouble with, George rode a train with us Lufkin out there one day, and I was sitting on the box, and I took a drink of water, and just, I don't know why I done it, I threw the cup out the window, and that was a no-no. You didn't litter the right-of-way. And he looked at me, and I said, I'm feeding the baby armadillos. I said, they got to have that paper. But I don't think he believed it, but he didn't say that to me.
Tell us about your wife making all those cakes, birthday cakes for Professor Jackson.
Well, my wife was a real good cook.
Charlie Foster, I'm sorry.
Back in those days. And wife's got Parkinson's disease now. She won't remember much of this. All the things she remembers what I do wrong. but she'd bake these cakes every birthday and bring it down, and we'd give it to Professor Jackson. And what I remember about it, he'd haul it around over in the quarters and everywhere else for about 2 weeks. Then he'd bring it back and say, okay, we're going to eat this cake.
And George would always be missing it that time.
Yeah, George would have to go somewhere about that time. And I wanted to go.
I was the only one that had a back door to my office. And when he'd come in with a cake, I went out the back door.
Who was it? You were telling me one time, was it Boots Jackson that told you to get back in there, or was it Jordan, or told you to get in there
he called us all. He said, Professor's ready to cut his cake. And I never did go in there. You know, I guess if that's insubordination, I'm guilty. I went to the truck shop.
Yeah, Mary always had a train or something on there. She'd pick some of those cakes there too.
Yeah, we've got a lot of newspaper clippings on that. Old Paul, I guess, come over and take pictures of it for many years.
I've got a trunk from Paul Durham. I'm going to bring you in.
What kind? It was guilty me to throw away.
Oh, no. Well, where's the place to throw it away?
It's when it all done started.
Oldest.
In the mucilage business, I guess. I got a little trump. Beth gave me. Said, go throw some garbage. And I just kept it. It's got a lot of stuff in there before he taking notes of different things for the paper.
Mr. Dover here was telling me about the Rusk and Palestine runs, 68 and 69.
68, 69.
And you were talking about the track and road conditions and bridges and everything, yeah?
Yeah, the track was good. Road was good. I think we violated a few rules, but men over there did. But
you said you made a few runs in 45 minutes.
We made a few quick runs to get off at 4 on Friday.
Did y'all have speed limits then?
Supposed to have been. There's supposed to have been speed limits.
Just got through bragging on it.
Supposed to be. Now, like I say, oh, there, he done gone on. I mean, you can't run me off.
Well, I wouldn't blame him.
Well, TSE has been known for breaking a few rules, you know, and not, well, on purpose, yes, but we knew if George had called us every once in a while, we were condemned. Ooh. I was a Sunday conductor one Sunday up in Lufkin, and we had a rule we didn't roll cars by, and what that means is you bleed the air off the brakes, and you get the engine up above, and you just roll it by, hoping the handbrake will roll up. And he would always come out there and get our list to take into the yard office, and I was cheating where I should have been, and I rolled by, and I remember what he told me. He said, I sure hope one day I don't ever drive up here and there's a car rolling by. And I never said nothing else, but I knew I'd call. And I knew I was going to get chewed on, but he never did say anything to me. But I never will forget one night. My wife went in labor with one of my kids, and George was going to pick me up. And he told the engineer, who was Sammy Tucker, he said, Sammy, Mike's wife's in labor, bringing on in the dive box. And then we could almost hear him hesitate because he didn't believe in speeding out there. He said, y'all don't get to going too fast. Y'all just come on in. And on the way to the hospital, he gave me an option of going through Hoshaw or around 59. And he told me, he said, now if that train's on that track and we get blocked, it's going to be your fault. Now you have an option which way to go. And we chose Hoshaw. And needless to say, she didn't deliver until the next morning and everything. But he was with me on both of my kids when they were born.
That would have been the Southern Pacific. Right?
Yes, sir, Southern Pacific then. And I was so scared I was going to lose a day's pay with my daughter. I'd call in about every 30, 40 minutes. And my wife was in labor, and I said, she hadn't had it yet. And she had it at 5:09, and we got off work at 5 o'clock. And so, nice thing to say, I really didn't lose a day's pay. But they take care of me out there. If you was honest, TSE, they took care of you and everything. But George and Don and Charlie, I thank God for them because they've helped me in a lot of ways that back then in the 78s and the 80s, I didn't know I would use some of their experience today. And one of the best memories I remember when Don just took over, we had a big derailment in Lufkin, and George had just retired, and Willard Connor had just retired, and Charlie. And Don and I drove up there in a car, and that car, it was turned over nearly. And I looked at Don, and Don looked at me, and before both of us could say anything, I told Don, I said, I think we need to call George and Willard. Don said, I was thinking the same thing. So I can still use these guys for helping me out on this railroad, and they'll come and help me anytime I call. And the friendship and the loyalty, you just don't have that in today's business world. And I think that's what a lot of companies now are lacking, is leadership like these guys had.
It's Don. We worked together in the office there, the three of us. And I don't guess we ever had a cross word. At times we disagreed with one another, but I don't suppose we ever had a cross word or a falling out.
You had to manage the horse. You made our paycheck.
He wasn't going to pay for it. And Charles had it over on the others because he had to sign them.
I remember one time after George retired, we got a car on the ground going in the particle board. It was before you got to the road crossing, yeah. You know. And George happened to come down that day in his pickup, and he parked there and walked out there and didn't say a word. I said, "Well, George, what do you think about it?" "Charlie, you got a problem." Went back, got that pickup, and left.
But I tell you one thing, I don't know how George done it when we had the Lufkin in and the day in. I'd get to work at 8 o'clock or 7:30. He would be at the office, and we'd work sometimes 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning at night, and he'd still be out there with us. And then you come back to work, he'd be in his office. I don't see how the guy ever got any sleep, and it just amazes me. We had 3 times as much business back then as we do now, and I just don't see how he's done it. And I tell you, TSC, if it wasn't for George, Willard, and Don, and Charlie, they wouldn't be no 100-year anniversary, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we had it scattered, this is Carol, we had it scattered from Diboll to Palestine.
Yeah.
He was watching pretty good distance. Was always in a phone distance.
And what was neat, George had a safety rule, and this is one of the few times you could argue with a conductor. George had a rule, you didn't put a car on a track that you didn't have to put it on there. And if you had to make a switch with a conductor, you didn't agree, all you'd have to say is, "Hey, we're breaking George Honey's rule. We're putting a car on a track that don't belong there." And he doesn't believe in that. In other words, you don't make a switch unless you have to. And that is good advice today, because if you don't have to do it, don't do it.
In other words, don't drag a car around next to a locomotive.
That's right.
Until you're ready to put it where it goes, pretty much.
And one thing Don told me when I signed in, he told me, and I had Don for Little League coach, but I believe he meant more biz steers, what he told me, he said, "If you don't think it's safe at TSE, you walk off from it, because you will not get fired if you think something is unsafe to do. You just don't worry about that." And George, he brought that to our attention several times. If it was unsafe, you didn't do it. You didn't do it.
I believe the worst I ever got onto, but it was through a little bitty note from Diboll. Depot went rust. "Carol, how long are you planning on keeping them 3 boxcars over at Calhoun packing plant? We don't want to buy them." Charlie Foster.
I don't remember that either. Yeah. But I think the way.
I do. Oh, there, he just lied about that note.
George was on vacation one time. Charlie was doing the general manager of the night job and everything. I come in, and I got a list. We had about 40 cars, and we were plugged up with cars. And he gave me that list, and I said, "What am I going to do with all these cars?" He said, "I'm not the conductor. You are. You handle it." And so that's what he told me.
We had some good times.
You got something to say, George?
No.
I'm trying to remember some of the things that George has told me and Gary Mike's told me when we hadn't had the tape machine going.
Well, George, I will say this, and he may get mad at me, but I don't care. When we catch a hobo in the boxcar, our philosophy was if we called George, he'd tell him to go up to Temple Associates, and they were hired, and he'd take them up there, and they'd be, you know, hadn't had a bath or anything, and he'd tell them they'd iron them left and right.
Got you.
See what I'm talking about in criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. Brother-in-law Haywood.
Who was it? Was it Mr. Shirley that drove the car off in the pit?
Yes, sir.
You were telling me something like that?
Carol can tell you about that.
No, I wasn't there that day. I was working nights when that happened.
Mr. Shirley was our shop foreman, and we had a rule you didn't drive a car over the pit to change oil unless you had somebody spotting it. And we come in from switching, and the car was in the pit, and Fred Barkley, you just had to hear Fred laugh to understand what I'm talking about. But he asked Jim, first question, was he okay? He said, yeah, I'm okay, but he said, I hit the gas and still the brake. And he said, I got to go tell George. He said, yeah. He said, I'm not going with you. And it took two records to get that car out of that pit, but we laughed about that. And we're, you know, it could have been real serious, but it just, it wasn't nothing but an old damaged car.
Don't even think about it.
I can't say that.
You're not going to tell it?
Huh? You're
not
going to
tell it?
I don't
want you to. You'll turn that thing off or get me out of it, I'll tell it. R.C. Green was a secondhand who was moved into the office and did office cleanup and yard work. And he was bad about dragging the mower along the side of the office. And it was lap gap type siding, and it'd go like a kid with a stick on a picket fence. Well, here he comes down off. So Ed Steed, the conductor, was at his desk, and I walk up behind Ed, and his RC comes by the window. I'm going to tap the window.
I standing in the door.
Yeah. I was going to get his attention. Well, I didn't tap it. I just run my hand all the way through the glass window, broke it. And right in RC's face, nose to palm. Needless to say, he stopped. And RC don't do that in a real polite manner, I'm sure. But anyway, then you know the next thought is, am I gonna bleed to death? Well, it wasn't very bad. And Charlie said he was a witness. So I go back down to my little office and I come back and tell Jimmy Beth, I said, I'm going over to the shop. I left Don, Charlie, and Jimmy Beth. I said, I've got to go over to the shop. And I said, I don't want to hear no one laugh when I go out that back door.
Yeah, I reminded George of that here about 6 or 8 months ago or sometime. I
the arm cut. Was not cut very bad.
Y'all mentioned Jimmy Beck. Now, who was that?
Paul Durham's wife.
Paul Durham's wife. Can you remember, can y'all just name some of the employees that you worked with and what their jobs were?
Gee, and at that time, T. Burris were the ladies that worked in the office. There were some others, y'all.
T. Burris? The initial Ferguson, T?
When we all came to work, it was a young lady named Clara Ferguson. Well, she got married after she went to work. Yeah. She
was Hamby was the first.
She married Bill Ferguson here at Iowa. What was her first
name? Her name was Clara. And but she was a Hamby at the beginning.
Yeah, Hamby. Married.
She married Ferguson. Clara Ferguson.
And we had several others, you know, that short term, but those all worked a good long
time. Yeah. D.D. Groom. Worked at TSE for a while.
D.D. who?
D.D. Groom.
G-R-O-O-M?
Yeah, she worked at the
corporate
office. Not Groom anymore. I guess she's married to somebody else. Person. Then Margaret Rush used to work for TSE. That's his aunt. Works in there. She worked for TSE. And
now, did Geraldine Poland, she worked there a little bit, didn't she?
Not after I come. She is over at the fiber board.
Yeah.
When I come.
I don't think she worked at DSA. So, not to my knowledge.
Well, that's a few days, maybe. But
for a while, and then there was Melville Price worked at DSA for a while, too.
Lily.
Yeah, Lily
Grumbled or Bound. She married Bound.
She worked on the copy machine pretty regularly.
Yeah, I'm one good one on that. She always kept the copier cleaned up and everything where it worked. She knew more about it than anybody, so. Benny started getting bad, and George said, you're going to have to lay her off. So he had me to do it. And I went in there and told Lily, and we just hadn't got enough business. But we did get her a job down at Temple, I think, or recommended her.
Yeah.
Got a job down there. Well, she wound up over there, that place where the...
Atlas.
Now.
Roofing.
It was still Temple then. And the copying machine went out one day. I called over there, I said, Lily, we need you to come over here and see what's wrong with this copying machine. She said, Charles Foster, you fired me. Well.
You said, no, I didn't. George did.
That's about how it goes. But I got bad joys, you know. I didn't really expect her to come, but I just couldn't resist that.
And Jimmy Beth Durham, she taught me a lot of the accounting from her and Charlie. And Jimmy Beth could have been a school teacher, I think. She would teach you so simple. And I still have the charts I use today that Jimmy Beth made me. I was so hard-headed, and I couldn't figure it out, so she made a simple chart. And I still have that chart, and I use it every day to do car hire. And it's how you figure your hours on a car that you got to pay for dime or money on. But Jimmy Beth, she was smart. She was real smart.
She knew more of the office procedures than most of us. She was good to have. Relied a lot on her. I think we all did.
We did.
Tell me, Don, about some of the work that you did. Gary told me that you did quite a bit of insurance and payroll and
credit. Well, I did the everything. I did the group insurance, payroll, and the taxes.
And this was all when TSE was its own company.
Yeah. And the
corporate accounting,
the stockholders
papers.
Stockholders reports.
Housing authority.
Yeah, we did.
Credit union.
We just moved from everything. Whatever needs to be done.
When did y'all move into the building that you're in now?
Oh, what was it?
Approximately
71. Something like that.
And before that, y'all were in the building that was built in the late 40s. The one over here just inside the sawmill. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I was over there the other day. You know, they're going to tear down that smokestack.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's going to be a long, drawn out thing. But they were saying they're going to tear down the old office building.
Is that right?
TSU, yeah.
Hmm.
Hmm. But that's all, you know, in the works.
Remember talking about, you were talking about in there a little bit ago about the long hours that the men used to work for the railroad. I remember when C.A. Jordan was in charge and the vice president when I went to work down there. And he was the type of person that never said anything to anybody. He just, he never took his pipe out of his, never took his pipe out of his mouth, never took his hat off. The only time he took his hat off, it had to be something special. And so men, especially on the crew, they would, every now and then they would bring in things to give C.A., you know, from the garden or what have you. Like that.
Getting
right. So one day, one Friday, one of the men brought in that evening a squirrel. Gave C.A. to take home to cook at night. Well, C.A. laid it on his desk, that dead squirrel, hardy skin, and all that. Took his hat and laid over that squirrel. So when we got ready to leave that day, well, everybody just jumped up and we left. We got home, and see, he never thought about his hat, anything, until Monday morning, got back down there. You couldn't walk in that place. He barely could get in there and get that hat. I think he finally let that hat air out and he wore it. But you talk about stinking, it stunk. That squirrel in there.
And that was in the old building.
Right, the old building, right. Yeah. Also one guy, no, see, he didn't say much, didn't say anything to anybody. And Pat, Faith Patrick was the, lived back during the time when he was a conductor, I believe. And he said one day, you know, in there, CA, Mr. Jordan walked through, said, CA, he says, we need more money. Jordan didn't say anything. Walked out. After a while, he came back, sat down, he says, all right. Said, I'm going to give you more money. He says, we're going to go to work at 4 o'clock. We're going to get an hour extra. That told me, he said, LCA, we wanted more money. We didn't want more hours. But that's what they got.
Faith Patrick, he was a character.
He was a character.
Mine, his birthday is the same day, and he used to call me every year on my birthday and practically tell me where to go and just laugh, you know, and hang up. But the first night I ever went to Lufkin, you know, at night, I was heading in Brakeman, and before we left Die Ball, he came over here and he put his finger right in my face, and he said, you better not go to sleep, and you better let me know what's coming on them crossings. I make myself clear. And Pat didn't weigh 100 pounds soaking wet, and I was scared to death of that guy. Man, I stayed awake the whole time when I was running with Mr. Faith Patrick. But
one of the things I remember about when I first went to work down there was from Clara Ferguson. And she worked in the traffic office next to Mr. Jordan. And all the doors, they kept all the doors closed at that time. Nobody went in anybody else's office except Mr. Jordan. He just walked through it, but he closed the doors. All the doors were closed. He would dump his pipe out, dump it over into the trash can. And the time he'd get it and strike his match to light his pipe again. And when he struck it, he made one strike and then threw his match. And sometimes he would land in the trash can also. And he would just, he'd holler, Jackson, that office is on fire.
That was Boots.
Yeah. that was Mr. What was his name that used to be in there? That married me to Cake Farr?
Mr. Jackson?
Yeah.
Professor Jackson.
Yeah. Professor would run in there with a bucket of water or something on the trash and put it out, you know. In fact, he burned up a lot of car records. They were good ones. You know, he threw it and he got down on the floor and called on fire. But invariably, that thing would catch on fire. And lots of times he would throw that match, you know, when he lit it. What? Without putting it out, he would go on somebody's door. You know, and I've gotten up from my office and walked around and put a match out. And he would just go on and leave some door. Like he never phased him though, he just kept doing it. But he never took that pipe out. And that's where he stuck. And on a safe that we had, I guess it's still over there.
Still there?
On one side of that safe is where you see him with his. It's still a big place where he struck a match. Struck those matches.
Safe is still there.
Still there.
You need to look at that.
He was a character. Very nice character.
George taught me how to get rid of the government men, which is FRA. And they come in and check your record, just turn the air conditioner off. They won't stay long. And once you turn that off, and I learned that from George, when they come in, I turn the air conditioners off where they'll leave town. But you learn a little bit from each one of them. But Willard Cotter, he used to tickle me, rather. We'd jump the track, and it'd be a bad one. He'd look at it, and he'd sort of give you that little laugh. And he always said, Mike, if you're going to have a railroad, you're going to jump the track every now and then. I don't care. It's going to jump the track. And Mr. Connor, he was a good friend, and he had one eye, but I guarantee you one thing, when he looked at a track, it was level when he let the jacks off of it.
Well, when did y'all start ballasting the road, Mr. Honey? You were telling me one time about ballasting
Mr. Jackson started getting ballast before he retired.
He's probably in
the 60s. Put it out, but he never did get it under the ties. And after he retired, we were given instructions to upgrade the railroad, and we gradually, about 5 years probably?
Mm-hmm, not 5 years.
Ballasted the whole railroad. Changed out most of the rail, all up to 75 pounds, and put the ballast under the ties. It wasn't under the ties. Really, it was sitting there looking for it, but it wasn't doing anything.
Up in the limb, we just had mostly 60. We had some 75, but mostly 60. 160 pound rail. 60 and 75.
Can I tell them about you going riding with Mr. Jackson?
You sure can.
Pontiac?
Oh, yeah. You know,
you was there long, ain't you?
Yeah.
Sure.